countrywide on RTE Radio 1.
Well, you might well recognise that sound, the call of the male corncrake. It is a sound that has become all too rare across most of Ireland, as we've reported many times here on the programme. And the reason, well, at its heart, the corncrake really belongs to an Ireland of the past, the 1950s, when small mixed farms, hay meadows and wetlands were common. Back then, farming was low intensity and the landscape was a lot more diverse. But for corncrakes today, Ireland is a hostile place. And that includes areas like the Shannon Callows, which were once a heartland for the species. Corncrake haven't been heard there since 2014. Well, in response to the threat of their extinction here, just under €6 million of public money was allocated a few years ago for a four-year project aimed at helping them, particularly along the northwest coastal counties. Well, that project wraps up this year, and one of the places involved is Inishbofin, off the coast of Galway. Suzanne Campbell travelled out to the island to see how the corncrake is getting on, and she met first with farmer Pat Coyne.
I would have been involved in corncrake conservation probably for 30 years. There was a guy that used to come out here in the old days from the MPW, a guy called Tim Gordon, and he kind of regenerated them, and we got them up to about 10 or 11. And it was great, like, but you couldn't improve it on that. And then subsequent to that, they got the Life Project then, and that's been going for the last 5 years. The main things in relation to the corncrake, really, what we have to do is, number one, once you get a chance, 1st of March, you let your field go. But previous to that, say the October, November, you make sure the field is well grazed so that good, clear vegetation comes up again. And as a result of that, the bird likes that and moves through it. And that's why we have to let it go, say, from the 4th of March. So by the time they come back in late April, there's ground there and cover for them, which is very important.
Okay.
And at that stage, then they start to shout, and hopefully then a week or two they mate, and then usually they move on again and do a second mating.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So when I've been here before earlier in the year and they are calling, that's to call a mate or define a territory, is it?
It is both, yeah. They want their own territory, and where they call from is never the place they actually nest. So they need someplace very safe to nest, and it's usually quite a distance away from that, maybe 100, 150 metres. And then if everything goes according to plan, when they have the first nest out, they move on and they go to a different location. Like, the great thing this year now, it looks like there was probably 14 birds in Inishbofin, especially in May, early season, there was a lot of them. Inishturk, down next door neighbours, there's about 7. And in Inishark Island, it looks like 5. So even though Boffin would be the stronghold, I suppose it maximises the amount of birds, and then they can go on the close hinterland, and it makes a great difference as well. So as a result of that, you have mid-20s this year of corncrakes in this locality.
So the ones in Boffin, almost all the territories that they want are taken up, so their offspring, when they come back, they might be going to Turk or Inishark.
And that's the feeling that people have, or the people in the know, the experts. They think that they will migrate out further as the next generation come back, and that's a good sign, you know.
So here, is this one of the territories here, or where?
It is, yeah, it's just on the graveyard now there. And you can see that field now is nicely balanced, growing. Every July, there's the actual team from the corncrake project come out and they score it. And this field here actually got a 10, so it couldn't be any better. It's a perfect location for them. Probably the best natural habitation for the corncrake is the nettle.
Really?
Yeah, because it grows up and it covers an area. And underneath that, there's a lot of bugs that live there, and there's a lot of space to move around freely, you know?
Yeah, so they need it open on the understory.
They do,
The lower part.
Yeah, they don't need it too thick. If it's too thick, the grass, they can't move through it, and they move on right away, you know?
Okay, so there's so many factors that need to be right.
Well, that's why it's very important that it's grazed and it's ready to go 1st of March. So, like, the first crop should be in place, nested by late May at the worst case scenario. And then that means they can have another crop in July. As a rule, most people could silage in July or August, but out here now we wouldn't do it until late September, because it gives them a chance to get ready to migrate again back to Africa.
Yeah, and for you and tourism, we can start probably walking back now. For you, because you own a hotel, the Dolphin, like a lot of the people who come to Boffin, I presume, are very interested in the corncrake project and the conservation.
Oh, especially interested in the corncrake. Like, we would do 3 bird watching tours, in 2 in May and 1 in June, and the price priority bird for everyone to see and hear is the corncrake. And as a result of that, it's great for tourism, it's great for biodiversity, and it means a lot more people are interested to come back and they say, I haven't heard the corncrake in 30, 40 years when we were young. Especially a lot from the Midlands now that have come down in the last generation, they'd hear their parents speaking about it. And a lot of their parents would come back as well to try to hear it. So it's reminiscent, and it's a kind of something that people found very special, yet very annoying when they were 40 years ago because they shout all night, you know.
They are loud, aren't they, when they're in their full tune?
There's only two actually shouting at the moment every night, one in the east end of the island and one back in Fawnmore.
Okay, I've tried to find both, by the way, and they won't talk to me.
The big worry now we have going forward is the Life Project is finished this year, and what's going to happen in 2026. And the big fear is that it's going to be linked into acres. Any farmer that's doing this is doing it for the love of farming and the love of nature, not pure economics, but it helps at the same time, you know?
Yeah, of course, because you can't put stock in those fields.
From the first, I would have 6 hectares now that there'll be no stocking from the 1st of March until the 1st of October. And the funny thing about the corncrake, he loves the good land as well.
They are discerning.
Very discerning. They have no time for the rushes, They're not up to speed with them, you know. The main thing is you enjoy the rest of your day here.
Well, I'm very lucky to be here,
There's
no place like it.
Even in the rain.
That's it. Thanks for talking to me, Pat.
Take it easy and enjoy the madness.
Lovely stuff there from farmer Pat Coyne talking to Suzanne Campbell. Well, the manager of that Corncrake Life Project is John Carey, and I'm delighted to say he's with us this morning. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Ella.
John, for a bird that is so rare in Ireland, one that the vast majority of us will never see and never hear. It's a huge amount of money that was dedicated, just under 6 million euro for a 4-year project. Presumably without these intense efforts, the corncrake would have gone all but extinct by now. Why do you think it's important that these efforts continue and so much money is poured into to saving this species?
I guess when we started thinking about having a life project for corncrake back in 2018, the population of the birds nationally was down to about 168, which is just incredibly low. And they'd been in that kind of population range for many years. So they really weren't increasing in number. The efforts to save the corncrake were really only perhaps prolonging its decline and slowing it down. So with the advent of a lot of results-based agri-environmental schemes in particular, in Ireland, where we have great examples of agri-environmental schemes that are results-focused, we've seen success for conservation and farmers. So by trying to use available European resources to develop an agri-environmental program for corncrake, the idea was that by doing that, we can work more closely with farmers, more action and results-orientated, to improve the situation for these birds.
And I know you're still crunching the data. At the start of the project, so it was 2022 to 2026, at the start of the project, you wanted to increase, your aim was an increase of the breeding population by 20% compared to 2018 when it was, as you say, 150 calling males. Do you expect to achieve that?
Oh yeah, well, we actually achieved that within year 3 of the project. We had already achieved a 35% increase. So the results of our approach to this were really happened really quickly. So we knew if we did it right that the birds would respond to us reasonably quick, because corncrakes are quite short lived. They only live for about 2 or 3 years in the wild. So if you can work with them intensively for a short period of time, you can grow the population reasonably quick. So like within year 3 of the project, we'd already increased the population by 35%. So we exceeded our target. But you don't rest on your laurels then. That is the basis then for growth, to try and get this population up again to a more sustainable level. And last year we had 233 calling male corncrake territories in Ireland, which was the highest in 25 years. So we knew the approach of the Life Project, and indeed the MPWS corncrake program, which all worked together, that this multifaceted approach was working.
Everything is about the male call, isn't it? And I just wanted to play, and we might just have a quick listen here, to the female call, because she does call too. Have a listen to this. It's much less rasping, isn't it, John?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's that same disyllabic call, but it's extremely rare to hear the call of a female corncrake. And scientists still are unsure why that bird calls, why the female bird calls. But we suspect she calls if there's no males around and she's in good habitat and she's trying to figure out why is there no potential partner here. So generally, when we hear that call during our survey work, it's not actually a great sign. It means that we've got a female bird here who has found good habitat, but there's actually no male bird to partner with her.
No male bird around. Are there any new locations that it's been heard this season around Ireland?
Yeah, we are still crunching the data, as you said, but we have had birds again in the Dingle Peninsula in County Kerry, which is very positive. We also had a bird for the first time in many, many years in West Cork, in the Mizzen Peninsula. And we had a bird in Waterford, near Kilmacthomas, which is probably 30 years since there was a bird in County Waterford.
That is particularly extraordinary, isn't it? Because your project is very much focused on the north and the northwest counties. And I was going to ask whether have you all but given up on the south and the southeast of the country? Of course, they used to be there, but haven't been in a long while.
Well, with the nature of corncrakes, they tend to return to within 5 or 10 kilometres of where they were born. So their range expansion can be very, very slow. But when you do get a larger population increase, like we've seen in the past 5 years, occasionally you'll get nomadic birds or even small groups of nomadic birds, because they probably migrate in groups that basically, you know, these are extra new birds to the system. And they might just find themselves a little bit off course and in new areas. But if the habitat seems suitable to them, they'll have a go at breeding. And that's really interesting because, for example, in County Kerry now, we've seen birds arrive there for the last 4 or 5 seasons, which is indicative, because they're short-lived, that they have successfully bred. And now there's a small population of birds that are kind of hardwired to go back to that area.
So you need to keep going with that and make sure they continue to do that.
Absolutely.
I just wonder, John, I mean, you've been living and breathing corncrakes for the last 4 years. When was the first time you heard one?
Interestingly enough, it was in my home county of Sligo, and it was back probably in 2017. When I was working as a ranger with the National Parks, I got a call that there was a corncrake in West Sligo, and would I just go out and check it out. And I was familiar with the bird's call, of course, but I'd never heard one in real life. So this isn't long ago. I'm a corncrake blow-in. but I can vividly remember standing with a young farmer on the side of the road, and he was telling me where he thought the bird was, and then it just started calling. And it was remarkable, really.
It is quite the thing. I've heard it myself, yeah. And it is quite remarkable to hear it in real time. And just finally, with the project now finishing, what is going to happen to this conservation work in the future?
Well, look, the good news is that, you know, during the last 5 years, we've developed really strong actions that we know work. And all of those actions have been now adapted into the ACRES Cooperation Project. So those actions are available through ACRES as a landscape action for all of our farmers who are involved in life. And we're now busy transferring a lot of them across to the ACRES program. But sitting complementary to that, the National Parks and Wildlife Service has committed to mainstreaming the actions of corncrake life. So we're working on the framework for that at the moment and how it'll look. But going forward, there's going to be action for corncrake in the long run. And because what we don't want is any backsliding on how well we've done to increase this population. And I mean, for the future, we would like to not just see corncrakes in their core areas on the West Coast. We'd like to see them far more widespread and even returning, hopefully, to places like the Shannon Callows, which
would be
a heartland.
Huge success if they did, because as I said, they haven't been there for 10 years. Just in 10 seconds, do you feel optimistic about the future?
Absolutely. I mean, we started with such a small number of birds, and what's been achieved with everyone involved, farmers, conservationists, everything is just remarkable. So they're going in the right direction, but they have a bit to go yet, mm-hmm. Ella.
Okay, well, listen, John Carey, thank you very much. We'll keep an eye out for that report, which should be published in the next few weeks.